From CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal, Quebec, I'm your host, Dial Lasoski, and this, once again, my friends, is Liberty in Exile.
And so it is to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
We do not choose to be ruled. We elect to be governed.
In your heart, you know he's right.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bring you liberty, not destroy it. The evil that governments do lives after them. The good is often interred with their bones, so let it be with liberty in exile. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm your host, Dial Lasoski, reporting to you from the bustling metropolis that is Montreal, Quebec, and Gitmo Nation, Great White North. On this, the third day of December, 2010. Our website, as always, is libertyinexile.com. That is libertyinexile.com. There you'll find the show blog, the Twitter feed, the links, the videos, and much more offered to you free of charge. Also, check out the iTunes podcast in the iTunes store and the CJLO app in the App Store. Transitioning slowly here today into the subjects that we have. Number one, we do have Claim the Interwebs, Wanksters and Banksters, Wiki Peaks, Terror Theater, Climate Disruption Function, My Bad, Euroscepticism, and The Science Is In. Now, it has been about a week now since I have been before you at this microphone, and I believe it is good to look at the news, see what's sort of been played out in the last few days, and there have been certain stories that have dominated the media complex. These are the ones that we like to focus on and assassinate, because as we know, what goes on in the media day by day and the messages that they put out are there sort of to push you aside, push you astray, because the normal populace does not know what goes on. Here, we'll head on here. We'll head to one of the biggest stories out there today.
You're an expert on terrorism. Is Julian Assange, by leaking, I mean millions and millions of documents, aiding the enemy, and should we regard him as, a terrorist or an enemy combatant, and what should we do?
Well, the problem begins or originates within the U.S. military and the source of the documents. Now, we've arrested a young man. Frankly, in my judgment, if he's guilty, he should probably be executed. I think that would send a very loud and clear message as to the seriousness of this problem. Julian Assange is a secondary problem, and we ought to do everything possible to undermine his efforts right now. But I don't see him as the real problem so much as the people within our own government, within our own military, who are leaking these documents to begin with.
Neil Livingston, good to see you. Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving. We're just talking about killing people, assassinating people, and executing people. So, is Julian Assange a terrorist or an enemy? That's what's played out, of course, on the Fox News channel. The great channel. Great service. All right. Now, what they're talking about is, of course, the WikiLeaks documents that have been basically leaked to the press. And this had over 250,000 cables that were sent out by the U.S. State Department abroad, all over the world. And these were leaked to WikiLeaks by most likely Bradley Manning, who was a private corporal in the military, who would give those to WikiLeaks, head of Julian Assange, put those on the website. And basically, it's threatening democracy abroad. That's what the people want to tell you. Now, there's a lot of interesting things in these cables. And what is interesting to note is that these messages that go back and forth are just diplomatic cables. So they're basically diplomatic communications between diplomats in different countries. That's really what's going on here. And of course, it's interesting to note that all this stuff is going on, and you see different stories. And there's a couple things going on. You have the revelation that apparently Russia is a mafia state run by the mafia. Saudi Arabia wants to bomb Iran. Canada apparently has believes it is inferior to the United States, inferiority complex. Bah! That's one thing. Different things also. China apparently would support a unified Korean state. Isn't that amazing? And the State Department is also basically talking to foreign governments and saying that if they want FaceTime with Obama, they want FaceTime with Hillary Clinton, they have to take some prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. There we are. But one of the most interesting revelations to come about in this does come from our own CBC.
Like many other media around the world, CBC has been reporting the highlights of the WikiLeaks diplomatic cables this week. Tonight, the tables are somewhat turned. Newly released cables contain diplomatic exchanges about CBC television. Senior correspondent Terry Malevsky is here to tell us what had U.S. officials looking to change the channel. Terry.
Well, Diana, as expected, these latest leaks include American diplomats talking about Canada's so-called inferiority complex. But it's also the CBC's turn to get burned, with the U.S. Embassy complaining that this network runs anti-American shows. Shows like Little Mosque on the Prairie set off alarms at the embassy by showing an innocent Canadian bullied by U.S. agents.
You guys got an appointment?
No. However,
next...
Roger.
Diplomats also objected to episodes of The Border, like the one where nasty U.S. agents put an innocent Canadian on a rendition flight to Syria.
It's about an innocent man being tortured in prison while people like you cover their asses while they sit there to rot.
That was based on the true story of Meher Arar. But in a 2008 cable, the embassy called it anti-American melodrama, adding this: the degree of comfort with which Canadian broadcast entities, including those financed by Canadian tax dollars, twist current events to feed long-standing negative images of the U.S.
Long-standing negative images of the United States. So basically, you have these embassy officials, people who are supposed to be working for the government that is the United States of America. What do they spend their time doing? Watching CBC and Little Mosque on the Prairie.
The extent to which the Canadian public seems willing to indulge in this feast is an indication of the kind of insidious, negative, populist stereotyping we are increasingly up against in Canada.
And a little amusing was that American diplomats would spend their time watching Little Mosque on the Prairie. It's a great show.
Yes, like this British man, Ignatieff, has ever watched the show. What a weirdo.
I would have thought they had other things to do.
But entertainment matters, the embassy said, citing The Border again for showing an arrogant U.S. agent, quote, bossing around her stereotypically more compassionate Canadian colleagues.
I'll be running our new integrated cross-border initiative.
What's it called, Operation Piss Off the Canadians?
The producer of The Border says, sure.
Operation Piss Off the Canadians.
We took shots at the Bush administration, but then we lightened up.
Season 3 of The Border was the Obama administration came in, and The Border softened, you know, our stance towards the American government.
And today, the American ambassador softened the U.S. stance, too.
CBC is not anti-American. It is not biased in its coverage.
Are you just saying that because we have an inferiority complex?
I don't buy that one either.
Still, briefing President Obama for a visit to Ottawa, U.S. diplomats did warn about Canada's habitual inferiority complex. But now, of course, there's no need to feel inferior. We've joined the big boys by being trashed in diplomatic cables.
Ah, there we are. That's coming from the CBC. Basically, American cables now that have been leaked by WikiLeaks talking about Canada and the CBC and what's going on there, saying that it's anti-American. Well, you can have your own view on that. But the interesting story is everything around WikiLeaks and the focus that different media play out. And especially with WikiLeaks now, the story has become Julian Assange. It's become this Australian that the government is obsessed with, to the point that they're pressuring every single government
to turn this guy in. Now, there's a new arrest warrant for him on the Interpol site. Interpol is the international police organization. Basically, they hand out things and try to organize extraditions and things of the like. They put out criminal charges against Julian Assange in this apparently rape molestation case that happened in Sweden. Even though it's kind of shaky, we don't really know too much of the details. We know it's probably a sham. And you have a lot of people in government, a lot of people coming out and basically saying that we need to declare WikiLeaks a foreign terrorist organization. These are terrorists, and we need to execute them. Whenever has information become so deadly? Now, this is very reminiscent of the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg, back in the 1970s when we found out what was actually going on in the Vietnam War, realizing that the strategy was not cut dry, just like the leaders proposed. And the same thing is true all across the world in the wars, where we basically bankrupt our own nation. Isn't that amazing? But you just had plenty of people on the tube talking about, well, getting rid of WikiLeaks, getting all this down. And actually, I read this morning now that the site has been shut down. Apparently, they did have their servers up through Amazon, but Amazon caved to U.S. pressure. It's been shut down. I downloaded the WikiLeaks thing myself. Does that make me a foreign terrorist? I don't know, but I have them saved on my C drive if you are interested. They're government agents. Now, listening to this and listening to those that are bickering on television and read the newspapers and everything and the like, it is a big story, and it's important to realize, and it's important to see what goes on. But this is stuff that we've been talking about on this show for the past year. None of this stuff is new. We know what goes on. Talking about what goes on in Afghanistan, what goes on in Iraq, what goes on in all these different countries, we know what. We've been talking about this since the very beginning. The very beginning. Now, there's going to be a lot of focus on WikiLeaks. There are certainly a lot out there who see them as a threat. Believe me, information is critical. And they do have a lever. And I'm in fringe to see that. I like that. Now, we're sort of transition away from that. WikiLeaks, I do have plenty of notes, plenty of links that you can see on libertyinexile.com. You'll see them all there, listed from A to Z, as we say in Canada. But most people, especially congressmen from the Republican side, which I found extremely ridiculous, come out and saying that this guy is a terrorist. And there's actually some idiots who say that he could be, we could try him for treason, you see. Yes, treason. He's a treasonous individual. Okay, these guys need to go back to elementary school. Treason, my friends, is when you betray your own country. Julian Assange is, of course, from Australia. Now, if that's treason and he's leaking American documents, then somehow the dictionary has changed. Merriam-Webster needs to know of this. But the New York Times, London Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel, these are the major publications that have most of these diplomatic cables, and they have leaked them. And, that's all. I mean, if you're looking at the information, there's breadth of information to go through if you're really interested in that. But we see what's going on, and do not let the media turn the message into Julian Assange being a rapist or a killer or a terrorist or a treasonous individual. Once again, that's just the people coming out who are in the media trying to change your mind. There we are once more. Now, plenty of different other subjects that I have, especially financial news. That's probably one of the most interesting right now, but the entire point of WikiLeaks and being shut down, this just happened this morning. We're Friday now. This happened just this morning. They were shut down. Of course, they've put up some different media sites, mirror sites. They have different little URLs that they've put up, and they're trying to protect themselves. But millions of people have already downloaded the documents. I have them myself, as I said, on my C drive. If you're interested, just go to C drive, my documents there, U.S. government, whenever you're just profiling my computer. Thank you. There they are. And we're going to switch right now into financial news. But first off, we will have to play a little bit of a promo. We'll be right back after these messages. So now we are back here on Liberty in Exile, CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal, Quebec, and we wanted to do the transition to the financial news. And I have titled this section, Wanksters and Banksters, because we are getting swinged. We realize the news now that the Federal Reserve apparently has loaned out over $3.3 trillion to overseas and domestic institutions.
After months of pressure from lawmakers, the Federal Reserve today coming clean about some of its aid efforts at the height of the financial meltdown. Federal Reserve Chief Ben Bernanke made $3.3 trillion in assistance available, and according to today's release, large amounts of it went to institutions including Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, even U.S. units of foreign banks such as Switzerland's UBS and France's Société Générale. In the case of Goldman Sachs, the bank went on to post record profits last year after receiving government aid.
So here's what we're seeing again, once more. We've been talking about this from the very beginning. The Federal Reserve, that is the private central bank of the United States, is basically coming out and lending out trillions of dollars. Can you even imagine what $1 trillion is that would fill an entire stadium with $1,000 bills? We don't even know. But I have an article here from Christian Science Monitor. The Federal Reserve has lifted its veil of secrecy regarding special lending programs during the financial crisis, reporting to a mandate from Congress by revealing the specifics of transactions with firms like Goldman Sachs and Citigroup. Critics of the Federal Reserve are poring over the data, seeking red flags regarding potential improprieties, and Congress has asked its Government Accountability Office to sift through the numbers and offer its own analysis. At the same time, it's possible that the release of details will end up largely vindicating the Fed for the massive financial support that it gave the economy at the time of severe stress. The emergency loans, in the view of many finance experts, helped to avert a much deeper economic slump. And those loans have now been largely paid back without losses to the central bank. So that's the mantra that's being pulled out here. So basically, the central bank gives out over $9 trillion of your money to elite financial institutions who go on to make a huge profit. And this is supposed to be a good thing because, as you know, these big, huge financial institutions, they're the ones who actually have the control, right? Now, why are they getting over $9 trillion? Those of you right now in the soup lines, those of you who are having trouble paying your homes, did you receive any bit of this $9 trillion thing? Now, this is where I would assume the progressives would be on my side, and the progressives would come to me and say, yes, Yael, I agree with you. I agree $9 trillion and giving it to elite bankers. That is a bad thing to do. But no, the left and those who are progressives, and especially those who are in the media, always come out and continuously say, well, this averted a much deeper economic crisis than we would have had. How does usurping trillions of dollars from the hands of the public to give it to elite bankers help anyone? Anyone at all? Now, interest rates have been held at 1% or lower now for over 5 years. Before that, rates were brought down, money was lent out, loose money was all over the system, lending to an extreme. And where has that money gone now? Well, that money is sitting in the big banks, my friends, and it is put in the pockets of those executives who run it. And they're executives who are profiting from that. And they surely do thank those in the government who help them. Of course, these big banks who received trillions and billions of dollars, of course, they'd love to thank those in government that help them out. Their buddies, right? It's all the same. Here's an article from Bloomberg. Citigroup Incorporated, recovering from its $45 billion bailout in 2008, is in advanced talks to hire former White House budget director Peter Orszag, people with knowledge of the matter said. Orszag may take a job in the New York-based firm's investment banking division, the people said, declining to be identified because discussions are private. An announcement may come as early as today, one of the people said. Orszag, an economist trained at Princeton University and the London School of Economics, helped shape U.S. economic stimulus during the financial crisis and overhaul the healthcare system. Oh, that is amazing, isn't it? So we have the budget director of the White House, who is basically coming out and he drawing up the plans for the stimulus and which banks will get which money. We'll say, well, we'll give about $45 billion to Citigroup, and months later they turn around and give him a job. Wow. Corruption at its finest. Here it begins again, the revolving door, the revolving door, and the revolving door. Now, we've heard the name Goldman Sachs millions of times because this is one of the most elite financial institutions, and they recorded the biggest profit of 2009 and so far in 2010. They've recorded the biggest profits and received the biggest bailouts. And my goodness, who used to work for Goldman's? Oh, well, you had the CEO. Oh my goodness. There we are, Hank Paulson. Well, he used to be head of the Treasury. He signed the check that gave over $700 billion to these banks. And now he goes. He goes back into the private sector, goes to work for the banks once more. And people need to be aware of this. They need to see what's going on and understanding that having banks take over all of society is not a good thing. It has never been a good thing. But what are people here doing? People are very complacent. Oh, you know, they'll save us. You know, of course, the stimulus saved us. We had to spend trillions and billions of dollars to save the economy, even though unemployment still stands at 9.8%. And, income is going down. Yeah. Oh, the government saved us, of course. Yeah, had to bail them out. Yeah, that money, yeah, is good. Well, that's what we're doing here. But what are they doing elsewhere? They're getting active.
Just like their fellow students in the UK, these young people in Greece are protesting against possible education cuts and a feared rise in tuition fees. Indeed, some said they were also acting in solidarity with British students by taking their demonstration past the British Embassy in the capital, Athens. However, police arrested several students after clashes broke out. Officers used tear gas after they charged their lines in an attempt to break a police cordon in front of the country's parliament. This was the third protest in the last few weeks as the government discusses reforms which are likely to include shrinking enrolment and reducing the teaching workforce. The protests follow many others this year as the government struggles to curb public spending following the country's economic crisis.
So you have basically the economic hitmen who have descended upon Greece come in and totally change their budgets. And this is the EU. This is the European Union system. You have basically the dictates of the European Central Parliament who will tell you how much money you can spend as a country. You can only spend this amount of money. You can't go over that. But the people are getting active, and especially the students, those of younger age, who have nothing to lose and everything to gain, because they see that the system already is against them. The system is against them from the very beginning, from its inception. The system right now is penalizing those of us who have yet to do anything in the system. Now, especially if we look over in Ireland, what happened was in 2008, the Irish government guaranteed all bank defaults. They guaranteed all asset purchases, everything. So this basically meant that the taxpayers were going to be right there, holding in hand the moral hazard as soon as the banks went bust. So the private losses that are supposed to be private became social losses. So then it becomes a system of public losses and private gains. So socialized losses and private gains. Well, that's the same thing that we had in, well, Italy during the Second World War. It's the same thing that we had during basically the Nazi regime in Germany. You had fascism. When you have that, you have basically socialized losses, privatized gains. Government does not own the means of production, but it does control them. Oh my goodness, we're just going back in time. And the people in Greece, people in England are getting upset, but here it is not the same. We are complacent. Well, the bankers are there to help us, and we'll put Ben Bernanke on the cover of Time magazine, the man who saved us, even though he lent out $3.3 trillion to places like Goldman Sachs, to places like Citigroup. And now there's the new word coming from CNBC, that the U.S. is going to back the bailout of the EU. The United States will be ready to support the extension of the European Financial Stability Facility via an extra commitment of money from the International Monetary Fund, a U.S. official told Reuters on Wednesday. There are a lot of people talking about that. I think that the European Commission has talked about that, said the U.S. official, commenting on enlarging the 700 billion euro, that's $980 billion, EU IMF European Stability Fund. It's up to the Europeans. We will certainly support the IMF in these circumstances. There are obviously some severe market problems, said the official, speaking on the condition of anonymity. In May, it was Greece. This is Ireland and Portugal. There's conjugation, and there's a problem for the global economy. So now the Fed, that is the Federal Reserve, is using its huge coffers and its money-printing machines to bail out the rest of the world as well. Where does it end? Where does it end? Bailout after bailout. Money that is thrown out there, created out of thin air. There we are. What is next? And people are getting upset about this, and it is amazing, but looking at the European Union, we have to realize that what goes on there might be coming to North America as well. Now, the Europeans have been in a union, especially the monetary union, since 2002, and there have been many Eurosceptics. There have been skeptics who have come out and said that this is a total failure, and it shows that these countries, like Greece, like Ireland, like Portugal, should not have joined the euro, because that involves them, and it encages them in a prison. This is coming from across the pond, our own European hero, that is Nigel Farage.
Well, good morning, Mr. Van Rompuy. You've been in office for 1 year, and in that time, the whole edifice is beginning to crumble. There's chaos. The money's running out. I should thank you. You should perhaps be the pin-up boy of the Eurosceptic movement. But just look around this chamber this morning. Just look at these faces. Look at the fear. Look at the anger. Poor old Barroso here looks like he's seen a ghost. You know, they're beginning to understand that the game is up. And yet, in their desperation to preserve their dream, they want to remove any remaining traces of democracy from the system. And it's pretty clear that none of you have learned anything. You know, when you yourself, Mr. Van Rompuy, say that the euro has brought us stability, I suppose I could applaud you for having a sense of humour, but isn't this really just the bunker mentality? You know, your fanaticism is out in the open. You talked about the fact that it was a lie to believe that the nation state could exist in a 21st century globalised world. Well, that may be true in the case of
Now, they're facing something very different right now in Europe. They're facing basically the idea that nation states don't exist anymore and they do not work. And the European Central Bank, the European Union, the European Parliament, they are the best ones to decide what happens in your country, what happens best in Great Britain, what happens best in France, in Germany. They're the ones who have the knowledge. They're the ones who can design the perfect society.
Who haven't had a government for 6 months, but for the rest of us, right across every member state in this union, and perhaps this is why we see the fear in the faces, increasingly people are saying, we don't want that flag, we don't want the anthem, we don't want this political class, we want the whole thing consigned to the dustbin of history. And we had the Greek tragedy earlier on this year, and now we have the situation in Ireland. Now I know that the stupidity and greed of Irish politicians has a lot to do with this. They should never, ever have joined the euro. They suffered with low interest rates, a false boom, and a massive bust. But look at your response to them. What they're being told, as their government's collapsing, is that it would be inappropriate for them to have a general election. In fact, Commissioner Wren here said they had to agree their budget first before they'd be allowed to have a general election. Just who the hell do you think you people are? You are very, very dangerous people indeed. Your obsession with creating this euro state means that you're happy to destroy democracy. You appear to be happy for millions and millions of people to be unemployed and to be poor. Untold millions must suffer so that your euro dream can continue. Well, it won't work, because it's Portugal next. With their debt levels of 325% of GDP, they're the next ones on the list, and after that, I suspect it'll be Spain. And the bailout for Spain would be 7 times the size of Ireland, and at that moment, all of the bailout money has gone. There won't be any more. But it's even more serious than economics, because if you rob people of their identity, if you rob them of their democracy, then all they are left with is nationalism and violence. I can only hope and pray that the euro project is destroyed by the markets before that really happens.
Thank you.
And that's our hero, Nigel Farage of the United Kingdom Independence Party in the European Parliament, exposing the sham that is the European Union. And what he's talking about is very important. He's talking about the prison these countries are in. This is an article from the New York Times. Eurozone is imperiled by the North-South divide. Sara Valle Lima, sales manager at ICAL, a Portuguese textile company, feels suffocated by the euro. The common currency once meant flush banks and easy credit, but these days it has laid bare a cold reality. Portugal shares the high wages and prices of richer northern European neighbors, but not their competitiveness. The price of a Portuguese roll of cloth in euros often exceeds that of a similar product made in competing countries outside the eurozone, like Poland or Turkey, by 30%. Britain, once a big importer of Portuguese textiles, has effectively devalued the pound, and ICAL now sells almost nothing there. Things are quite difficult, Ms. Valle Lima says. Devaluation is the time-tested prescription for such ailments, but Portugal is shackled to a currency that seems better suited to the relative strength of Germany or France than to southern countries like Portugal, España, and Greca, with their insufficient labor markets and tax systems and heavy debt. The European Union and the 16 nations that use the euro face two crises. One is the immediate problem of too much debt and government spending. Another is the more fundamental divide, roughly north and south, between the more competitive export countries like Germany and France and the uncompetitive deficit countries that have adopted the high wages and generous social protections of the north without the same economic ethos of strict work habits, innovation, more flexible markets, and high productivity. So we see what's going on there in Europe. We understand the problem. And, of course, people are talking about the same thing here. And, again, it is as if the economists are nowhere in debate, and it is politicians who decide what happens. It is politicians who decide what happens in the market. They're the ones who believe that they have the control. This is something that F.A. Hayek talked about himself. The fatal conceit that these politicians have is that they can control something that is as ferocious as the market, something that is as difficult and complex to understand as the market. These politicians believe they're the ones who can control them. They know how to stimulate an economy. They know how to do it. And the same thing happens here in the United States. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Now I think we should use a measure for everything that we do. What does it do to create jobs? What does it do to reduce the deficit? Unemployment insurance, the economists tell us, return $2 for every dollar.
These economists tell us.
That is put out there for unemployment insurance. People need the money. They spend it immediately for necessities. It injects demand into the economy. It creates jobs to help reduce the deficit. Giving $700 billion to the wealthiest people in America does add $700 billion to the deficit. And the record and history shows it does not create jobs. It does not create jobs.
Well, Madame Pelosi, you are at odds with your own ideal man, that is John Fitzgerald Kennedy, JFK, when he came into office, cut taxes immediately because he knew it benefited the economy. But what she is saying here is that one way to stimulate the economy is that here's what we need to do. Here's our plan, everyone. All right, we're going to take tax money, right? And it's taken from all people. This is tax money taken from everyone who pay federal taxes. Those of us who pay federal taxes are actually only those of us that make over $200,000. So therefore, we're going to take money from, these are the rich that apparently they're talking about in these tax cuts. We're going to take money from these rich, $200,000 or more, and we're going to give them to the people who do not have jobs. And what that is going to do is going to stimulate the economy because these people will go out and spend money and it will create more jobs. Now, this is the mantra that's put out as well by John Maynard Keynes. This is the multiplier effect. This is when you have this money, you take stimulus money, you give it out, and it multiplies. Given out, given out, given out. But this money does come from somewhere. This money is usurped from the public pool. But Nancy Pelosi says that if you cut taxes, jobs are not created. Not at all. Not at all. It is when you give money from the very top and just spread it amongst the bottom that jobs are created. Now, not only is this an economic fallacy, it does not make sense in the slightest. And now you have this huge debate, and especially those in the progressive blogs are coming out and talking about these tax cuts for the rich. The Bush tax cuts. They're for the rich. But they don't know that these tax cuts went to effect for every single American in the United States of America. Every single person received a tax cut. Now, what they're talking about is there were also tax cuts for those at the very top, which, of course, they hate, they do not like at all, and they're allowed to. It's all right. But what they want to do is take this one tax cut. It was one bill, one tax cut for all Americans, and what they want to do is split it up and saying, well, we'll keep tax cuts for people underneath $200,000, but everyone above, taxes must go up. So they're basically saying that they want these tax cuts for the rich, and they've dominated the narrative, and that's now the narrative in the media. Tax cuts for the rich. Tax cuts for the rich. And that's what they say, and people understand that. And people hear that in their head, and they're like, well, we're giving the rich an advantage with tax cuts. Not to mention the fact that we give them $3.3 trillion through our own federal central bank. But no! Here we are through the tax cuts. And when you get people talking about this, and you get people who are in politics, you get people who are politicians coming out and talking for this or against that, and you never hear the economist come out and actually talk about it. And if you actually listen to the true economist who come out and talk about this, they say that you cannot pursue a policy where you raise taxes on the rich in the middle of a recession and expect some sort of job growth. This already happened one time in history. Yes, that is true. 1934, the Great Depression. FDR raised taxes on the rich up to 92%. Therefore, you are working for the government 11 and a half months out of the year and 2 weeks for yourself. The rest of the money went to the government. And who are the rich, and they say? The rich are those who make $200,000 or more. Now, if you have a household where you have a mother and a father who both have jobs, maybe they're making $100,000 apiece, they're rich, they're considered rich, even though they may have five kids, there they are. But once more, you have class warfare that's brought up, and there's this demonization of those who produce in the economy. And if you demonize those who produce in the economy, you take away the incentive to produce in the economy. Now, what do? You basically make it so where business is vilified. Business is vilified. Big business is vilified. And what happens when big business is vilified? Well, they have no incentive to make any money. They don't make money. People do not want to spend money. And there you are. Recession, 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 recession. Now, that's only one piece of it. But we have to realize that a lot of things are going on in this matter. But now I'm going to have to transition over to sort of geopolitics and what's going on in the rest of the world. Because a lot does go on in the West, and this is where the mass of wealth transfers are occurring. But there is one place that we have had our own hand in destroying, and that is in the sovereign nation of Haiti.
Post-election anger exploding on the streets of Port-au-Prince. This was the fourth consecutive day of protests since the vote. But as numbers swelled on Thursday, tensions reached a level not seen in Haiti's capital in many weeks. UN troops were powerless to keep the crowds back. At times, the city center looked more like a war zone, sending street vendors scurrying for safety.
You see, the protesters are trying to block the road by laying down these big metal litter bins to try to stop the police from following the crowd down the street.
In a country on the edge, frustrations over a flawed election are taking on a new tone.
Now they try to give us a fake president, fake senate, fake deputy. The people Haitians say no. Now we want revolution.
Meanwhile, some leading candidates are still backing the process. One of them gave Al Jazeera an insight as to why when she told us that the UN's head of mission had informed her as early as Monday that she was ahead in the vote.
He told you you were leading.
He told me that, but at that moment, yes. I suppose that he had evidence that on Monday morning I was leading.
But it seems Manigat wasn't the only candidate to be told she was ahead. Michel Martelly is another leading contender who has reversed his position on declaring the election void. And contacted by Al Jazeera, his campaign team also confirmed they were told by the UN on the very same day that he was leading the race too. For many Haitians, this is business as usual with election politics. Even the revelation that Washington was aware Haiti's incumbent president would try to orchestrate the vote in favor of his candidate hasn't come as a surprise.
Well, it's a fact. So they're just relating a fact. Okay? Everyone here knows that this is what happened. Everyone knew was going to happen.
Amid rumors of backroom deals being made with the international community, and complaints that foreign powers are lending legitimacy to a fraudulent vote. The anger on the streets is palpable and looks certain to grow as the crisis continues. Sebastian Walker.
So this is a devastated country. This is a country that saw itself in an earthquake, had that over a year ago, and we see the effects now, and we have another fraudulent election. Now, if you do remember, during the earthquake business, a lot of international leaders came in and they wanted to support it. And they said that we basically need to send as much money as we can to Haiti. Don't you remember that?
I know a lot of people want to send blankets or water. Just send your cash.
Now, we had people like George Bush and we had people like Bill Clinton who went to Haiti and told international donors that we had to give them plenty of money. Just send your cash, they say. Now, these are the same people who have been meddling in Haiti since the very beginning. If we remember back to 2005, we did have President Aristide. He was voted democratically as president of Haiti, the only president democratically elected where there was absolutely no fraud in the election. And this man was seen as a danger to George Bush, who was in power in the United States at the time, in 2005. So what did they do? The CIA kidnapped Aristide, put him on a plane, and sent him to Central Africa. Now, since that time, he has not been allowed to come back to the entire Western Hemisphere. He's been locked away in Africa, not allowed to come back to his home country. Now, we have to realize the importance of Haiti. Of course, it does have massive sugar reserves, but now it is seen as a new kind of state, a state where internationalists shall have the reign. Those internationalists are going to have to come in, and they're going to be the ones who are going to decide what's going to happen to the people.
Shysters show up and take advantage of people's goodwill and generosity.
So the shysters, who are the internationalists, who are people like George Bush, Bill Clinton, and all of these international groups, especially the UN, are going to come in and project their own vision upon the Haitian people. And we already saw the peacekeeping forces have come in. And what did they bring? Well, those from Nepal, they brought cholera. And already we've seen over 2,000 deaths. Could be even more now. We don't even know. This is a decrepit state now in Haiti, and it is directly the West that is to blame. The France in the very beginning, and now it has been the United States. We have intervened over 7 times, at least militarily, in the last 100 years. And again, now we are doing it through the age and the art of diplomacy. Isn't that beautiful? This is Liberty in Exile, CJLO, 1690 AM in Montreal, Quebec. We'll be right back after these messages. The thing that I've been talking about, and we were just transitioning to here on Liberty in Exile, was the mess that is happening and occurring right now in Haiti. Now, we've seen massive protests, we've seen massive deaths, we've seen massive, of course, there was massive media attention in the very beginning. Oh, you had CNN Anderson Cooper there in a tight-fitting t-shirt who was helping babies move rubble. Oh, man, this is amazing. But once it came down to it, they all left and left the Haitians to their own demise. Now, we have intervened in Haiti now, as I said, over 7 times in the last 100 years, and that is through military force on its own. Our own government, our own CIA, kidnapped Aristide in 2005, sent him to Central Africa, and not allowed to come back. Now, the United States sees a strategic interest in keeping Haiti under its own wing for many different reasons. Of course, we do have the corporate sugar interests, and this has been written about times over. Listen to any speech by Chomsky, and he talks about this. Basically, as actually another quote by Chomsky when he's talking about the WikiLeaks cable, is that the United States hates democracy abroad. That is one thing that they are not in favor of. And that's one thing that I implore most people on the right and the left, or whatever party they belong to, that they have to understand that whatever our policies may be at home domestically, we do not support the same abroad. Now, that is true because we do hold up dictatorships above them all. Look at Iraq. Saddam Hussein was a CIA asset in the 1980s, preferred by the American government and put in place by the American government. And once it came time to vilify him, taken down by the American government. In Saudi Arabia, we have basically a theocracy. We have a government that rules through the fist of religion and power. Most people do not realize that they have the most American support. So we sort of see the double-edged sword, right? We sort of see how it works in global affairs, and people need to know what goes on abroad in their name, because once again, this is their money, their tax money, their good name, their good flag being used abroad to commit whatever atrocities they may wish. Now, I have another little piece here that has to do with different stories. It's called My Bad. My Bad. Oh, My Bad. Couple of bad things going on. Now, we've been covering the violence in Mexico that has to do directly with the drug war in the United States. And, of course, you have people who have stepped up to become police chief. I believe just a few months ago you had the 20-year-old police chief, female, came into a town, and she was the only one who was elected police chief. Came in, she said, I'm going to whoop down on this corruption. Of course, I'm sure her life has been in danger now, but a police chief now in Mexico has also been gunned down once more. Her name was Ermila Garcia. This is from the DailyNewsWire.com. She's one of the few brave, I'm quoting from the article now, Garcia is one of the few brave women who have taken up the top job in the police department. Apart from Garcia, another woman who did not fear the gangsters was Marioso Valles Garcia, who was the police chief of Praxis. Some consider the killing of Garcia as a warning to other women who have taken leadership roles in the police department. Now, the drug war in Mexico. What is going on there? If you talk to anyone from Mexico, if you talk to people who are aware of the situation, they realize and they understand that when you have 35,000 people who are murdered in the last 3 years, murdered, thousands of people, this tens of thousands of people murdered just like this, something is amiss. And what it is directly related to is the drug war in the United States and Canada. Drug production and drug cartels now run the narco state of Mexico, and this needs to be made aware, and people need to realize the effect of this. What this means is that our Mexican brethren who do share our continent are constantly in danger. When we continue to hold a product illegal and create the incentive to traffic it in the black market, you create a narco state. You create the violence. As we've commented on Liberty in Exile many times before, and we have the archives going back to the very first show, libertyinexile.com, we've been talking about what happens when you make a product illegal. We already had prohibition. We realized what happened when you outlawed alcohol. You created Al Capone. You created these drug liquor running gangs. You created the incentive to go beyond the law and use violence and force instead of peaceful exchange. And look at now, what happens when I go to the store and buy alcohol? Peaceful exchange. There we are. Give my money for the alcohol. That's it. No problem. If I would like to steal the alcohol that is in the Dépanneur, then I can go to court. I can be tried. I could go to prison or have a fine. But if I do steal any type of drugs, violence is there because the court system is not. You need to have a rule of law in place for things like this. And don't believe that this entire drug war is only in place so that it is for the bad drugs and so they don't get into the hands of children. We've covered on this program before, and we've talked about it from the very beginning, what is going on in Afghanistan, and it is 100% connected to the drug war in North America. Canadian military, American military, British military take the opium that is in Afghanistan, opium which is used to make heroin and drugs, and ship it back to the United States and to Mexico. They ship it back, and what is that is used to do? That is used to funnel the drug trade. If any of us do remember 1980s Iran-Contra scandal, the CIA was caught selling these drugs in order to profit, give that money to the Contras in Nicaragua, who would throw over the government that the United States did not like. There is a history of this. Any of you, as I said last week, have seen the movie American Gangster. The same thing happened in Vietnam. The drugs were put in the caskets of the dead American soldiers and shipped back to the United States. This global drug war is not a war on drugs, but rather a war on your freedoms. It is a war where the incentive to produce, the incentive to make money and commit violence exist. And it is our part to expose this. And this is what we have been doing at Liberty in Exile from the very beginning. Now, lest I go on to other subjects here, there is much that has been going on in the world of biodiversity, as I say, in the world of space and NASA. Very interesting subjects that we like to cover. Of course, there was a new life form that was discovered on Earth, one that could live and breathe arsenic, which is one of the most poisonous substances to us human beings, us Homo sapiens sapiens. NASA has a link here talking about how the funded research discovered this life form in the Mono Lake. Now, this is an entirely new life form that breathes an entirely new, different sort of gas and can exist. This changes the history books from the very beginning. We have to go back and look at science all over again, because we believe that carbon is the base of life. That has been the held assumption now for the past 150 years, that carbon is the number one foundation for life. But now, as we see other life forms basically growing up and using arsenic instead, well, there we are. It could be said that life forms could more easily spring up elsewhere. There's also a report here from the New York Times saying that how many stars we did think there were in the universe, there are now trillions and billions more. It's actually, there's over 7 septillion stars that exist now, as we know. We used to think it was only about 100 billion, but now over 6 septillion. Septillion. Again, if that was our government printing out septillion dollars, maybe we'd understand that a little bit more. But this is stars. This is something mass beyond our comprehension. And that's just one piece. Now, we've talked about WikiLeaks from the very beginning, which I called WikiPeaks. We talked about the Wanksters and the Banksters, those who were spending trillions of dollars. And now we like to talk about the interwebs, because that is one of the most important things. And as we talk about here at Liberty in Exile, we do represent alternative media. This is not the media that you get on your homepage of CNN.com, my friends, or that is pummeled to you by the CBC. Now we do have things that are going on online, and you do have places like basically the U.S. Congress, where things like this are being debated, where the FCC, that is the Federal Communications Commission, is out there hoping to be able to regulate the internet. And this is always, once more, for your protection. It is for you, you slaves, don't you understand? So the FCC is coming out and wants to regulate the internet and wants to help keep it neutral. That's this net neutrality. Here's an article from the Washington Post. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission plans to announce Wednesday a controversial proposal that would prohibit internet providers from favoring or discriminating against any traffic that goes over their networks. He would do so, however, without resorting to the more drastic step of changing the way the FCC regulates broadband providers, a move that would have clearly asserted the government's authority over internet access. In a statement provided to reporters in advance of Wednesday's announcement, FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski said he thinks that it was a sound legal basis to pursue a so-called net neutrality rules that would prevent companies such as Verizon, Comcast, and AT&T from blocking or serving up some websites faster and better quality than others. Now, you have to look at, when you're trying to look at this story and when you're trying to assassinate it, as we do on this show, you have to realize the incentive that these companies have to block websites and those that the government does. The government is there to basically limit the information that we see. That happened itself right there this morning. WikiLeaks was put down by the government. It did not want the citizens to see it. And that is something that Noam Chomsky also said in a recent interview, that the thing that is most damaging about WikiLeaks is that finally normal everyday Americans will get their hands on this information. Those of us who are now in North America and don't pay attention to this are going to have the incentive to understand the information that has been put out by these agencies. Now, when you have the SEC and people like this that want to regulate the internet, they want to come out and propose a plan. We are the ones who will hold control and the key to the internet. Never is it to be trusted. The freest form of information exchange that exists is the internet that is before us every single day. And it is important that we keep it that way. And some sort of legislation put out by some bureaucrats in Washington, it will not change anything of the like nor that of the matter. They will not. And that is one thing that needs to be understood. And if we keep looking to our politicians and those who write laws to help save us, then we are really in a terrible, terrible state. Now, that's just one of the subjects that we've been talking about from the very beginning of our show, Liberty in Exile. We started this show in January of 2010 as this year, and we've provided you the coverage from January until December now with the alternative view of the media assassination, and political commentary. And you realize the themes that go on: misinformation, disinformation, and strategic framing. That is what has happened since the dawn. That has happened from the very beginning, and it is our time and our choice here at this show to show you just that matter. Now, there are a few things that I would like to get to even more on this show. But of course, we don't have time. There are many different things we could cover. We could go on for hours and days and nights. But for now, in the off hours when the radio is silent, please do visit libertyinexile.com. There you will find all the links that was talked about on this show, the links that hold the key to information, and know that the information is out there within your own grasps. You do not just need me, the voice at the microphone, telling you such. I am merely giving you the tools, my friends. 'Tis all I am here to do. Realize that government is best which governs least, and keep its hands off of you, and that individual autonomy and freedom is to be worshipped and favored in all cases. The day hath come now when the elite dictates of a central authority has usurped all hope of just, equitable living. Trillions of dollars being printed out and loaned out to people who have more control than you or I. But the information that you now hold in your heads and your hands is what will set you free. Thank you once again for listening to Liberty in Exile. I'm your host, Yael Osowski. Au revoir et bonne chance à tous.
To tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!